Welcome to Bengals Scribe Session, presented by JosephOtto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, your Bengals beat writers Paul Daner Jr. and Richard Skinner escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily. All with the sidecar of snark and absurdity you've come to expect. Let's go. We're about to start a party in here. He's big strums and guitar in here. Looks like we got a good crowd in here. Turn it up to 10 and get lively.
Ball is out. The Bengals have scooped it up. Terrence Newman running back to the 30, 20, 10, 5, touchdown.
It is knocked up in the air. AJ Green makes the catch.
Oh man!
A deflected ball winds up in the hands of AJ Green, and the clock hits zero.
It's about to get rowdy here, but if you want to fight, get out of here. We about to tear off the roof in here.
All right, welcome to the latest, most special edition of Scribe Session. Paul Daner Jr., Richard Skinner, Nissan Sentra. We are here driving back from Pittsburgh, bringing you a special on the road podcast because we care about you. And frankly, if we're just going to sit here and talk and listen to the radio anyway, we might as well knock out a podcast.
Is there any chance on God's green earth that people who are not passing can get out of the left-hand lane? That's all I ask.
But there, we will warn you that if there is a some horn, maybe general yelling, we'll bleep out any expletives because we'd like to try to keep it clean here. Skinny's behind the wheel of his car, and we will be bring this to you while we drive, and hopefully no accidents occur and nobody takes the brunt of Skinny's anger.
I would tell you if there is an accident, it will be an abrupt end to this podcast.
Yeah, it'll just end. So if you do hear that, if you do hear it go directly,
we love all you listeners.
We love you. Thank you. It's been a great season. Hopefully we're not dead. But we want to do this because it's playoff week. So we got to go big, and we're going to add a second podcast later in the week. We're planning on doing it Thursday. We're going to do another live video podcast, much like we did last week, which I want to thank everybody that talked to us there on that and was interactive. It did really, really well. It seemed like you guys really liked it. So we're going to do it again, but I think we're going to try to do it on Thursday as a look ahead to the game. We'll do some of that here, looking ahead to the game, but we'll also talk a lot about what happened last night and kind of what that really means.
And the good news is on Thursday, it's New Year's Day. We're going to do it probably sometime, we're hoping, in the morning, so we're not going to get in the middle of bowl games. We're not going to get in the middle of everybody trying to get their day off to a start where they're just sitting on the couch doing nothing. Just get up, join the podcast, tweet us some questions. We'll have a good time. You'll have a good time, and it's a sure cure for a hangover. I promise.
It is. Well,
it'll make you puke.
Yeah, it'll clear your system, and that's important. So let's kind of get into this. Bengals obviously lose the season finale at Pittsburgh last night by a score of 27-17. Really, the recipe for losing big games pretty much played itself out. You talk about three turnovers. You talk about a punt return for a touchdown. That's how you lose, and that's definitely how you lose if you're in Pittsburgh and letting a guy like Antonio Brown do what he did. And that's why they're sitting here having to go to Indianapolis, which that game will be at Indy, 1 o'clock on Sunday on CBS, in case you didn't know. But that's why they're in this spot, because I didn't think that they – I thought they – a good majority of the game looked like the better team, even. I mean, I would even make that argument.
I can almost argue to you, Paul, that if you strung together all the minutes of the eight quarters they've played Pittsburgh this year, they've probably outplayed them six quarters worth of the eight. Really and truly. I mean, it has been it has been big plays. Back to game one, you know, it was the Andy Dalton turnover that led to a touchdown and the long touchdown pass. This game, it's Antonio Brown with the punt return, and then one Andy turnover leads to a touchdown. Another Andy turnover leads to the Bengals not being able to kick a field goal, and then an AJ Green turnover really kills at least a chance to tie the score at 20-20, or maybe even take the lead late in the game. And defensively, they did, I think, exactly what you would have hoped from the first time, getting just absolutely pushed around in the fourth quarter. Le'Veon Bell had 20 yards. They did nothing on the ground running the football. Ben never really hit a big pass until Antonio Brown took about a 12-yard, out route and turned it into a 63-yard touchdown. So I thought they did a lot of good things in both games, but still wound up with the L both times.
Yeah, I thought the defense took pretty big strides. If you look how well they contained Le'Veon Bell even before his knee injury from Reggie Nelson.
They contained him well after that because he didn't come back in.
Yeah, there's no doubt. But I thought that the defense did a good job of figuring out what they had done wrong in the first game against the rush and really making amends on that. I mean, they were fantastic stopping the run on Sunday and said, hey, they're going to force Ben Roethlisberger to beat them. And he did in many ways. I mean, he threw for over 300 yards, but he also threw him a pick. And really, if not for that late A.J. Green turnover, I think the narrative that we're talking about is very, very different today. In particular regarding Andy Dalton, and this is what I want to start by really getting into, because it's really the most relevant topic as you enter the postseason. Is so the big game knock on Andy Dalton reared its head a bit again. I mean, they're still so clearly limited with him in the passing game. They couldn't complete it. The last time they completed a pass that was in the air longer than 20 yards was the bomb to A.J. Green in the last Pittsburgh game. It's just taking the top off is non-existent, and every time he tries to throw it for 20 yards, the possession is up for grabs, essentially.
Honestly, the longest pass of the night the Bengals threw was thrown by a wide receiver lining up as a quarterback, not in a trick play. Mohamed Sanu was in the backfield, not on a pitch, not on a lateral. I mean, he literally took the direct snap from center. Now, you can argue that maybe you thought you'd catch Pittsburgh in the look of him running the ball, because they've done that a couple of times with him there. He threw a deep post to A.J. Green that was the winning complete that was obviously wiped out by a penalty. But it was almost like, all right, who can get the ball the furthest down the field? 12 can. Let's get him in there. That was bizarre. Agree or disagree?
It was... I don't know if it was bizarre. I mean, I think it's just it's not like it's something they've never gone to before. But it's true, though. You can see the thinking. You can see the thinking of, well, the only way we're ever going to be able to make this happen is maybe by using Mo in some sort of trickeration if you're going to throw it deep, because the rest of it just ain't happening. And there's whether it's miscommunication, whether it be just a bad throw. I mean, you cannot continue to put possession up for risk every time you want to throw the ball a little bit down the field.
Yeah, and the thing that was interesting, though, is you could argue the faults of who was at fault of the two interceptions, whether A.J. stopped the route and Andy threw it to a spot he was supposed to be, whether A.J. went up for the ball, he said it was his fault, Andy said it was his fault. That's nice. They both, take the blame for it. That's being a pro. But the narrative would have been a lot different if he was 11 for 12 at one stage of the second half and really got hot. And because Pittsburgh had decided at that stage of the game, you're not going to run it on us. We're going to put eight up, and you're going to have to find a way to beat us. And Hugh Jackson trusts him to keep throwing it. And he made some really good throws, a couple where he got outside of the pocket in some tight windows. It made some really, really good throws. But right, wrong, or indifferent, that stuff gets lost when you lose the football game. If they had scored on that drive and gone ahead and won, I really and truly believe he... Not just the fans would have gone over the edge thinking, all right, maybe now I can trust this guy in the playoffs. I think he would have really trusted himself in the playoffs. And maybe he does now. Maybe that core, that stretch of football was exactly what he needed to get himself back on track, because the last two games plus the first half, he wasn't very good.
No, he wasn't. But you're exactly right. I mean, what are we sitting here talking about right now in this Nissan Sentra?
What I'm talking about is the guy in the Ohio State truck has got to get his ass over.
listen, let's calm it down. Let's calm it down. Let's try to contain ourselves a little bit. I'm sure Ohio State Truck is apologetic. Probably a very nice man.
Watch what I'm going to say to him.
He's just trying to. He's just trying to have a nice. Aren't you glad? Aren't you glad that you tuned in to this podcast? Here's what I was going to say. How different would what we were talking about in regards to Andy Dalton be if his number one receiver doesn't let him down?
Yes.
If his number one receiver doesn't fumble there, doesn't get the ball stripped and give it away, they're sitting there in easy field goal range, at the very least going to have a tie, and Andy Dalton got hot and made it happen. The Steelers dared Andy Dalton to beat them, and he was doing it, and he was about to do it. And there's no reason to believe they wouldn't have at least gotten three. Who knows? Maybe it would have been another Andy Dalton disaster moment. He would have gotten inside the 10 and thrown a pick six that would have gone the other way for 90 yards, and he'd gotten blocked into the ground, and they'd show him with turf stuck to his helmet. And, you know, maybe that's what would happen. We don't know, because all this is complete hypothetical. But what gets lost, and so often to every quarterback that ends up taking blame, is that you have to look at the bigger picture. It's not always on the quarterback. And with the Bengals and with Andy Dalton, it will be. And his two interceptions were horrendous, and they cost them probably the game. That said, he was about to do it. He was about to, in prime time, in Pittsburgh, drive his team down for a come-from-behind win and have them possibly sweep Denver and Pittsburgh, both in prime time, to take them into the playoffs. But his number one guy let him down by doing something that the other team knew that he struggled with. Bryce McCain, who had the strip and the recovery, said after the game, the coaches told us all week, when 18 catches it, go for the strip because he doesn't put the ball away.
Yeah, actually, Antoine Blake had the strip.
Oh, I'm sorry, Antoine Blake.
But Bryce McCain is the one that said that, though. Yeah. So obviously they had worked on that, no question about it. And look, A.J. Green is a phenomenal player. Four straight 1,000-yard seasons. Makes tough catches. Is a world-class wide receiver, deserving of the four Pro Bowls he's gone to. But in this question got asked to me on Twitter, and I think it got asked of you, in a big moment, because in a big moment last night, in a big game, little Antonio Brown was a stud. Mm-hmm. Punt return touchdown. Short pass takes it to the house. Who in a big moment on this team is capable of making a big play to really carry you in a big seminal moment? It looked like it might be Andy Dalton. And then you're right. The guy who you think would be joined in his hip let him down. I don't know who that guy is. I don't know if they have that guy, to be honest with you, and that's a problem.
They hope it's Jeremy Hill. I mean, but you talk about unproven. I mean, he's a rookie, about to make his first playoff appearance. I mean, they hope it's Jeremy Hill. They hope it's somebody on this defense. Maybe it's Adam Jones in that respect. But I mean, as far as guys that you can't count on Adam Jones to run a punt back.
No.
You can't count on anybody on defense to do anything but play their role.
Well, you got to count on three people in the league. You got to count on either the quarterback is a stud making that play, a wide receiver is a stud making that play, or a running back is. And well, Jeremy Hill's been, I mean, three straight 100-yard games to end the season is just phenomenal. It shows that the decision to make him the feature back was long due and coming, but they did it. It's worked itself out beautifully. He's the guy that you've got to hope to do it, but he has not proven that in any way, shape, or form because he hasn't been around long enough.
No, and you're right, because we talked about what's been the difference between the Steelers and the Bengals in these two games. It's not been overall talent. It's been playmakers, guys that make the big plays when they need them. Antonio Brown is just that. He's a special player, and he's proven it in the biggest game.
And in the first game, it was Le'Veon Bell running crazy, and it was Ben Roethlisberger making some big pass plays. I mean, there's the three guys. The quarterback is a two-time Super Bowl winner. He's done it before. Le'Veon Bell showed throughout this year he's going to make really big plays when they need him to, and Antonio Brown is just off the charts great. I think he's fabulous.
And someone's going to have to explain to me how in year
four. By the way, we are passing, for those of you that made this ride on 71, we are passing the sign that tells us hell is real.
Hell is real. And you probably could go to hell in a Nissan Sentra, couldn't you?
I think that's the only passageway.
And hell will be very real if the Bengals take an L on Sunday, by the way. The rage will return. It will be, I mean, even just in Sunday's game, which had a tenth of the implications of what the Indianapolis game, even against Pittsburgh, the Dalton vitriol is just, it, you can sense, you can feel the fan base puckering up. It's like when you've decided not to fair catch a punt and you know everyone's coming right at you, you're kind of catching it, but you're mainly bracing for the hit. It's the Bengals fan base is collectively bracing for the hit.
But you know what it is, though? I mean, you can see there are now two clear-cut camps. There is the, they are just hoping Andy fails, waiting for Andy to fail, and then there are the ones that are, it's not his. It occasionally is his fault, and occasionally he does suck. And for the flip side of the camp is, occasionally he's really, really good. And that, I think therein lies the frustration. And you and I were talking about this. We were listening to some stuff earlier before we started the podcast. And it's funny to see how, you know, the coaches that got fired, tie them to really how bad their quarterbacks are. The only kind of exception to the rule would be Matt Ryan's a pretty good quarterback, but in their biggest game that they needed to win yesterday at home, Matt Ryan was garbage.
Yeah.
So think about, you know, Mike Smith probably saves his job. Maybe not, because there was already talk that he was going to go anyway. But he probably saves his job if he makes the playoffs. They were probably up for a change. But, again, in the biggest moment, his quarterback was terrible. Chicago coach fired. Quarterback was terrible.
Jay Cutler.
Yeah. You know,
Oakland.
Rex Ryan.
I mean, you name it.
And that's the part that I guess is so frustrating is I think any logical Bengal fan, if you're logical, you understand what Andy Dalton has done is still pretty damn good. Four straight playoff appearances. You should understand that. The flip side is, though, and until he gets it done in that very, very big moment, you are going to grow increasingly frustrated with him. And there's real no solution to it until he gets it done.
Well, not necessarily. You were talking about the camps. I don't. The one camp that doesn't exist is the Andy Dalton it will do it camp.
No, there's not that camp.
You can't find me a single person. And probably if you really gave the truth serum to those inside the Bengals organization, that would sit here and tell you that they fully believe that Andy Dalton will do it. I don't think there's anybody. They believe in what has been apparent by the way they have treated him this year as far as reining in what he does is they feel like they can win in spite of him, that he can make just enough plays and not ruin it, that could be enough for them to win because they have enough talent. And I would maybe even buy in that is possible, but there's nobody that's out there saying Dalton can carry this team and I believe that unequivocally.
Has he regressed?
The numbers would say maybe.
Yeah, but I'm just gonna eyeball test.
Mainly because you look at the touchdown interception, 19-17. You look at his completion percentage is up, but he's throwing it far less. They're asking him to do less. He's throwing it less. He's throwing it less downfield. I mean, you look at his percentages of passes 20 yards or more, which we I had that stat in the game day section this past week, went from about 11% of his passes 20 yards or more his rookie year to as high as 14%+ last year. Hugh reined that back down into around 11 this year. Average attempts, he was up at 36 attempts a game last year. He had 586 passes last year. He had 482 this year, a career low for him, even back to his rookie year when they really had the kid gloves on him. It's clear what their vision of Andy Dalton is. Rein him in, turn him into more of a manager, and making less risky throws, keep everything safe, and let the rest of the team win it. Does that mean he's regressed? Maybe, but it also just mainly means that they have chosen to pull him back. The interceptions are the problem. The problem. If you're doing these things and everything is less, and you're not throwing as many risky plays, and all the stuff you're trying to rein him in, you still throw 17 picks. That kills you because that's the one thing that was supposed absolutely many most. That is really what has killed this team, what has killed this offense. It has to have Hugh Jackson sitting here saying, you've got to be kidding me. All we ask is you don't throw picks. And yet, here you are,
okay,
reining them in and with 17 of them and a career-high interception rate.
Now, and again, trust me when I'm telling you, I'm not trying to make excuses for him in any way, shape, or form. I'm just trying to get inside of a guy's head who won't let you get inside of his head. But if that's what you're doing to him, does that not sap confidence to the point that when you're dropping back, that's the first thing in your mind is, okay, throw an interception here, and you just don't let the game flow naturally? Because it does. He looks more robotic now than he's ever looked. I mean, he really does.
Yeah, I would agree with some of that. I mean, I think there is a robotic nature to him.
Oh. Guy in New York, man, getting on highway. Hello? Push gas pedal, make car go.
When the Toyota minivan pulls out with far out of state plates, you just know troubles. You know troubles in front. And hammering a McDonald's sandwich.
He's eating the cheeseburger.
Eating a cheeseburger.
Oh my!
But you can only go so fast. Is there a speed limit while eating McDonald's cheeseburger?
Yeah, and I'm sorry for yelling at that guy. It's 53 miles an hour if you're eating a cheeseburger. So he was doing the right thing.
He was right on it.
Yeah.
What were we talking? That's just
complete. Andy Dalton cheeseburgers.
It's one of those things where it's really easy to throw the regress word out there and talk about doing less. But the question that I have in regards to that is, why is there such miscommunication between the number one receiver and the quarterback 4 years in?
We're going to find that out this week. We're going to ask. I mean, that question has to be asked.
Yeah. I mean, well, whenever we're allowed to talk to AJ Green, who's in concussion protocol after taking the hit after his strip, Mike Mitchell, proud Highlands Bluebird, delivering the hit to the head as AJ was going down, who told you now after the game. Skinny was in locker room first while I was in the Marvin Lewis press conference, and went right up to AJ. He was sitting there. We didn't know it was a concussion at that point because it was never announced what his injury was in the press box. Went up and talked to him, and then came out of it, and we found out after that he was in concussion protocol, which means he's not allowed to talk to anybody. But you went right up to him and said, hey, do you have a minute to talk? And he said, yeah, no problem, and did. So we were allowed to talk to him there and had some stuff for you in the paper on that, but he's, you know, NFL rules dictate that you can't talk to him. He doesn't have to talk if you're in concussion protocol. They don't want guys who are concussed having to speak to the media.
And I fully understand that.
Yeah, that's fine. But we don't know. We may not even get to talk to AJ Green this week.
Right.
Who knows? He could be in the protocol all week. Obviously, they hope that he will be back at practice on Wednesday, but the interesting thing that AJ said in that, where I was going with this, was he stripped it, and then I got hit in the head. And that's the only thing I remember.
Yeah, that's the last thing I remember was the hit in the head.
What a sport. These guys sign up for it, but that's the type of thing that happens where, I mean, you literally sitting there not that long after and don't remember what happened and how you ended up leaving the game.
Now, he did remember, though, what happened on the fact that it was getting stripped. He remembered, getting his hand on the Dalton interception. I mean, he was pretty cognizant. He doesn't talk in long sentences, but he knew it was being talked about. I mean, if you'd have told me he had a concussion, I'd have said, I doubt it. I understand. I mean, if that's what it is, that's what it is, and hopefully it'll be okay. But
it still doesn't make you figure out what's going on.
No.
The last 3 weeks in particular, really, starting with that Cleveland game.
Where is he?
Yeah, nobody knows where Mohamed Sanu is at this point. I mean, it's noteworthy if he gets targeted at this point. If the ball even looks, here's what happens. It's drop back, AJ,
almost,
dump off.
No, it is. It's almost like AJ Green is the first read, and the second read becomes the dump off. And maybe that's what it is. Maybe that literally is to make sure the ball's out of Andy's hands and he's not taking a risk, that if he sees the read he likes with the coverage to AJ, that's where he's going. If he doesn't, he's checking it down right away to get the ball out of his hands. And that's what it feels like, seems like. It's not, all right, let me read what's going on with AJ. Let me look at a secondary target in Mohamed Sanu, and then let me go to the dump off. It is literally, I'm throwing it to you, or I'm dumping it to Gresham or one of the running backs. That's what it's devolved into.
And how is there not even a couple of plays where maybe your first look is to Mo Sanu?
Yeah.
I mean, theoretically, you see it out there. They're rolling coverage to Green every single time. Their best cornerback is always on him. And you have Mohamed Sanu, who quite frankly made a lot of plays to help carry you midway through the season with their worst cornerback. And in the case of Pittsburgh, that's pretty bad with the attrition that they've had at that position. Out there on the guy, and he doesn't even get a, he hardly ever gets a look. Now, granted, he's had drops, and we've discussed those ad nauseum, and maybe that's a big part of it. Maybe there's a lack of trust, but I mean, he still can make a lot of big plays for you.
Antonio Brown dropped how many balls? He dropped two balls last night. Literally dropped two passes last night.
Yeah.
You don't think Ben Roethlisberger still didn't trust that cat?
Right. You're exactly right. I mean, the Sanu thing is, but the miscommunication ever since, really since that last, the first Pittsburgh game when Green went off. I mean, the game in Cleveland with those with balls going the complete opposite direction where Green was breaking deep and just nothing looking right, and even against Denver, obviously you had the miscommunications there. I mean, with the injury, you didn't have hardly any balls going to you, four targets, no catches. And then everything that you saw in this game with A.J. running and then stopping his route and the ball goes deep and gets intercepted, or the cut in and the ball sails, and, who knows? And then it seems like there's something,
there's
a disconnect. And how is that possible when you're in year four and they were really humming? I mean, up until that Cleveland game, they were really playing well, and it was one of the best runs of AJ's career we were talking about. I mean, he was smoking hot, and they were hitting on everything, and now all of a sudden, and most of that run was because they were doing so well connecting when they had shots deep, and now it's like they don't even know where the other guy's possibly running to.
The Cleveland game was just egregious, and that was, right, that was the start of it, and it did. It kind of carried over a little bit to the Denver game. Some of it wasn't as much miscommunication, just simply accuracy issues.
Yeah.
Especially the one that was high that led to AJ getting hurt. You know, and sometimes, you know, you talk about the accuracy issues, and again, I'm not pointing fingers because I don't know the answer to this. I don't think we'd get an answer to this. You know, on the one in the Denver game, was AJ supposed to run and cut it at 14 yards, or was he supposed to cut it at 12? The one last night that was thrown high, was he supposed to cut it at 15 yards or 18? I truly think both of those balls were bad throws in my heart of hearts, but sometimes you see that and you just make the assumption, oh, what a terrible throw, when the timing of it is the wide receiver was supposed to be there and that's where the football was delivered to. Again, I don't know that,
yeah.
You got to look at sometimes big picture of stuff, but whatever it is, they're not. There's a disconnect between the two of them right now, and you sure can't have that on Sunday if they play together in Indianapolis.
Yeah, and it's something that we talked about last week, and we've talked about quite a bit, is your running game is hot, and it's proven that they can run against just about anybody. I mean, they go obviously over 100 yards again, and Indianapolis is the worst team amongst those still in the playoffs in the AFC against the run.
Then.
Oh, the Lions Den.
There's a Lions Den. Can we? Oh, well, that,
women,
oh, it's
men.
It's not a pet.
Women, men, couples.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's nice. You think they have real lions in there, Skinny?
I was. That's what I thought it was, Bull.
I mean, I wouldn't. I wouldn't know. Yeah, there's
I wouldn't know.
No way to know.
I don't even know what that means.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, you've got an indie team that is susceptible to getting beat on the ground. So maybe you think you can just run it all day, but their teams are not going to let them do that. They're not going to let them sit there and pound the run all day, just like Pittsburgh did. Lots of blitzing, lots of run blitzing, lots of getting after the quarterback, saying, "Hey, you're not going to have time for any of your slow developing pulls and things like that." They're not going to let you do it, and they're going to force the quarterback to beat you. And like we said, he started to do it the other day, but Green and Dalton have to get on track in order to keep teams honest in that way.
Well, you remember the first time Indy and the Bengals played, it was without A.J. Green. It was when he was one of those games he was hurt because of the toe injury and didn't play, and they got nothing done in the passing game and nothing in the running game because they literally challenged with eight in the box. And when I mean eight in the box, there were eight guys within 2 yards of the line of scrimmage, like a high school team defending another high school team. You know, and I don't think they'd be able to sell out completely if A.J.'s healthy this time around. But what if he's not, Paul? And they can go with the same defensive game plan where the last time you had no guys that could get open. I mean, that Indy game, for one time I can tell you, was not on Andy Dalton in any way, shape, or form. you could see down if no one was getting open that day.
Yeah. No, it was, that was 100% on the receivers not being able to break free. I mean, that was really it was a turn for a number of the receivers on the back end of this roster that kind of were just inactive for a while after that, where they had just seen enough. And
even Sanu was bad. Sanu couldn't get open that day.
Yeah, Vontae Davis, who's a very good corner in this league, really was able to shut down Mohamed Sanu, and the rest of the guys didn't have much of a chance either. So at some point you're going to have that connection. And why it's happening, who knows? And we don't know what will happen with AJ Green's concussion protocol. It's as we have said all year, it's a nebulous situation. It's weird. You don't know. Maybe, you know, probably he'll be able to come back and play. I mean, we've seen a week has been brought a lot of people back, particularly when there's not, like, multiple concussions. This is the first one I can remember AJ's had since he's been in the NFL. But.
And you've heard enough people tell you there's no such thing as a mild concussion. Yeah. But, if he was sitting in his locker and at least conversing for a small period of time, at least there's some synapses going on properly in his brain. I mean, you've seen guys that have just... I've seen them that are completely out of it, couldn't tell you what day of the week it is. So I'm sure there's got to be different grades and degrees of it. And if you pin me to the wall today on Monday as we're driving down I-71 at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I think he plays Sunday.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. They're going to need him, obviously. There's no doubt about it. I mean, this guy, talk about a year for him. I mean, when you talk about all the injuries. We don't even talk about the toe thing anymore.
Yeah, the bicep.
The bicep, now a concussion, and all of them he's really had to battle through. I mean, it's been a tough, challenging year for him in that respect, because this is a guy that really hadn't hardly been injured. He missed one game in his career with a hamstring thing. He missed that he had pulled down a long pass against Pittsburgh. And now all of a sudden he's had to deal with all kinds of injuries. So that's something that's got to get figured out. Kind of moving forward a little bit to talk about a little bit more about this defense and what we saw. Let's talk about Reggie Nelson. And I gave, I know he's really happy. I gave him the game ball. He's probably not happy at all. I'm sure nobody reads this.
He was not happy at all.
No, Reggie was not happy after the game. I mean, you saw after the game, he obviously approached Mike Tomlin, shook it, and it looked like it was cordial at first, like a little half bro hug shake. And then next thing you know, Reggie's saying something, and Tomlin's kind of going back at him a little bit. After the game, Tomlin claims that it wasn't about his hit on Le'Veon Bell, which came to Bell's knee that hyperextended and put him out. It was about something else, is what Mike Tomlin called it. He said, she said, that something about that he did not say and that it was untrue.
Yeah, the only thing I can surmise from the way he phrased it, the way he was talking about with the injury was... I guess he thought that somebody, a teammate of Reggie Nelson's, said something to him that he thought Tomlin had said about the hit. And the only thing I can think of is Tomlin tried to clear the air with that to say, hey, he made it clear that he did not think it was an illegal hit. Yeah. He went out of his way to say it was a legal hit.
And that he respects it.
Reggie Nelson, I'll take Mike Tomlin at his word for all that. I think at the end of the day, I think Reggie honestly overreacted, that maybe a teammate thought he heard something, maybe it was another Steelers coach. He pinned it on Tomlin. He tells Reggie, hey, Tomlin just said this about you being a dirty player hitting Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah.
So Reggie Nelson at the end of the game is on edge about it, goes up to Tomlin, addresses him about it, and Tomlin's got the look like, what? What are you talking about, man?
Yeah.
And then Reggie didn't want to address it after the game, other than to say, I asked him about the tackle, and he said, just making a football play. And I think that's all he was doing, was just making a football play. And I think at the end of the day, I think he overreacted to Mike Tomlin, to be quite frank.
Yeah, I think that's true. But and as far as the hit goes, I don't have a problem with it. You can't. If you are going to, in this league, tell these safeties making bang-bang plays through their checkbooks that you cannot go high, that you can't hit anything, who knows where the flags come out if you're even in the vicinity of the head, much less, and you're just making a quick play when a guy's turning and you hit him in the knee, I don't think you can fault a guy for that. And like Tomlin said, and it's obvious, it was a clean hit. It was a legal hit. If you want to call it dirty, you can call it whatever you want to. I don't think it's dirty at all. I think it's playing the game the way the NFL is dictating it be played.
There's no question about that. And the other part to it, again, it happens so fast. If Reggie stays upright, there's a chance that Le'Veon Bell takes away, because he caught it on the dead run. Full speed on the dead run, kind of down the seam, almost like a wide receiver. It's actually a nice catch. He takes another step or so before Reggie comes up, and if Reggie comes up straight up on him, there's a chance Le'Veon Bell has tire tracks on him going to the end zone. I mean, you have to make a tackle the best way in that circumstance you can make a tackle. You know, whether you think you're going to get a penalty or not, that's the best way to make the tackle in that circumstance. Just chop a guy down. It just was an unfortunate circumstance for him that it happened in the knee area.
Yeah, and then really, if it would have been just a couple of half a second one way or the other, his foot wouldn't have been planted, and it wouldn't have been a thing where it was hyperextended like that. He just would have flipped up in the air. But, you know, when you're throwing a guy into a seam with a safety coming at him, that's the type of thing that happens. There's going to be a collision. And so I don't have any problem.
And you and I were shocked. We were listening to some Pittsburgh radio as we drove out of town on Monday morning, and the hit got brought up. The host thought it was he said, you know, hey, it's the way, you know, you got to make the tackle in that circumstance. We were waiting for the fans to blast it. I was kind of surprised that I think most fans understood that that's simply the way you got to make the tackle in that circumstance.
Yeah, and I wonder if you polled most players what they would say. I would imagine most players would say I'd rather get hit in the knee than the head, knowing what they know now. I don't know. I would think so.
You know what?
I would.
I'd rather get hit in neither.
Right, that's why we're in a car. Yeah, that's why.
Unless I hit this truck in front of us going 45 miles an hour.
But yeah, I thought that was. I think that's it. But that's what the NFL has turned this league into in so many ways, as a league where, hey, guys are going to get hit in the knees and it could be really bad, but that's what they want, because you want it to be safe and you don't want to have issues with concussions and guys getting hit to the head.
Reggie's played pretty well lately overall. I mean, yeah. He's made some plays on the football. The interception was kind of thrown to him. It was not a very good pass by Roethlisberger. But it's funny. You don't think of Reggie as a ball hawk and all that. He ends up leading this team in interceptions on the year. That was his fourth. It's not a lot. But he's played pretty well of late.
No, he has very good instincts. And he did a really nice job blowing up some of their wide receiver screens they like to use. You know, he's very active.
Did that against Denver, too, blew up a wide receiver screen.
Yeah, he's very active back there. He's been playing really well. He's kind of just a Mr. Consistency, a bit of an unsung hero of sorts for this team, and really has played well. It's unfortunate that maybe he'll get some bad run for what happened with Tomlin, because it'll go viral and everyone will be wanting to talk about that. But
we may find out today that they cleared the air. That at the end of the day, Tomlin called him, or he called Tomlin, and they worked it out, and maybe he says something about it. I doubt it. Oh, he said, my line's open. James Harrison's got his line.
Yeah.
So we'll see if they talk.
Well, there was pushing and shoving and a whole lot of jawing after that while Bell was on the ground after that play, with people talking trash to Reggie Nelson. But I think also a lot of the players that were out there understood. It was like a two or three people, it seemed like, from the Pittsburgh side were getting real animated.
Yeah, there's always the fake tough guys taking up for the guys. And it's, you know, good for them. It's, you're backing up a teammate, but a lot of times that's a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah, I know. You're right about that.
I want to touch on one thing. What did you think of the way Drake Kirkpatrick played? And now what do you do with Terrence Newman? I talked to Terrence for a couple minutes in the locker room after the game. He still said he's not feeling very well. But you got to think another week passes, all that stuff's going to be out of his system. What do you do?
Well, I thought Dre played fairly well. Obviously, the one play. But here's the thing.
I thought that was kind of fluky, Paul. I thought he had good. The pass was thrown in a weird. Usually in that route, I think the pass is going to go to the outside. I think that's where Dre went to the outside. Ben threw actually kind of a risky pass, because if Dre gets his head around quicker, he throws it right to him.
Yeah, when that ball leaves Ben's hands, it's Brown and Kirkpatrick right next to each other. And then all of a sudden, while it's in the air, it was a quick twist around and the guy's gone. Here's the other thing. I mean, Dre Kirkpatrick played fairly. I think all the corners played fairly well. When you consider they had to cover for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 seconds, no cornerback in this league, Darrell Revis, you know, Vontae Davis, I don't care who you name me, every Pro Bowl corner that this league has to offer cannot cover Antonio Brown for 3+ seconds. 3, 4, forget it. And this, the lack of pass rush in both of these games against Pittsburgh is astounding. For a guy that loves to hold the ball and take sacks if he has to because it's worth the risk to him, to only have hit him twice in two games, no sacks, two QB hits, is unbelievable. And there was no pressure all night long on Ben Roethlisberger, and that exposed the secondary in many ways. And maybe that was part of the plan. Maybe part of the plan was to focus on the running game, keep them contained. I refuse to believe that this team isn't trying to get after Ben Roethlisberger a little bit more, especially knowing the way he will throw you the ball if you put pressure on him. But that put a lot of pressure on guys like Dre in these corners.
Yeah, if there was a criticism for Paul Gunther last night, it was the inability, I guess, to adjust to sending more guys for pressure. Now, everybody wants to say when you're not getting the quarterback with four, you got to blitz, you got to blitz, you got to blitz. You know, this team, when it's blitzed, hasn't gotten home very much in blitz situations either. They haven't been the greatest blitzing team on the planet. So maybe that's his thought process is, look, I've got 15 games worth of film that says I blitz from here and there and everywhere, and we ain't getting home blitzing, so what's the point in it? I'm just going to rush four, cover with seven, and take my chances to bend and not break. Again, I know the easy answer when you don't see guys getting home with four is, well, blitz. That sounds easy and simple, but again, if you're not getting home on a blitz, then what's the point of it? I would suggest they would need to find a way, though, coming up. We'll talk more about this later in the week. If Andrew Luck has the time Ben Roethlisberger has, he's going to do the same thing to him. He's going to kill him.
Yeah, and especially when you've got the speed that Pittsburgh has on the outside, where if they get one-on-one, you can just throw it up and let them go get it. If you blitz and don't have a safety help back there, I mean, you have what happened to Leon Hall in the first game.
Yeah, or a guy takes an 8-yard hitch route. I mean, Antonio Brown is so good after the catch. That's where you get him in space one-on-one with an 8-yard hitch route, he turns the hitch into a 70-yard touchdown. So I understand it, but I also understand the flip side that says, look, you got to do something to get home because you ain't getting it with the front four.
Yeah. So, all in all, I mean, Dre, he wasn't great, but I didn't, you know, Terrence Newman had worse games in the last few games that he had played than what Dre had on Sunday against Antonio Brown with a defensive line doing him no favors. I think you stay with him. I think he's earned the right to.
This time of year.
I do.
Put the veteran back in there.
I don't.
I think they will put the veteran back in there.
You think Newman goes back?
There's two things. There's what I would do, what you would do, and what the coaches probably will do. Coaches like veterans, man.
They do, but I will tell you, I mean, and in talking with Paul Gunther this past week,
he was high on Dre.
He was really adamant that Dre had earned more playing time, and he was going to get more playing time. And this was last Tuesday or Wednesday.
Before we knew
Terrence was going to continue to be sick all week, before anybody thought that he would be inactive, it was a thing of, hey, Dre earned more playing time, and he's going to get it. And not only that, he didn't just get more playing time. He was inserted as the starter over top of Adam. So Adam came in as the nickel.
Well, Adam still wasn't feeling very good either. I don't know if you heard him as he was leaving the locker room last night.
Yeah, no.
He said, another out, I'm going to be sick, y'all. He wasn't feeling very good either.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the whole DB room was sick. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, how bad it was. I mean, pretty much everybody in that room had come down with something. Everybody was getting ill, which, you know, that's what happens. This time of year, stuff like that starts going around. And when you're playing games in the rain and practicing in the rain because you don't have an indoor practice facility, it doesn't help anything. But, you know, I'm sure everybody knows that storyline. I will say, I would stick with him. I would run out maybe a rotation if you want to, you know, to keep Newman fresh. So maybe you have a couple of series where you put Newman in and a couple of series where you have Dre in and go with the hot hand. I mean, that's fine.
And maybe that's the way to go, and especially against T.Y. Hilton, because they love to send him deep. He loves to go deep.
And they exploited Leon Hall with T.Y. Hilton.
Yeah, and I was going to say, if it's a circumstance where he goes deep on a play, rotate somebody else in there for the corner that just got deep on and give that guy a quick blow and go from there. So maybe it gives you a rotation of four guys.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting thing to figure out. You know, last year, this time of year, Terrence Newman, and this is a little different when we're talking about sickness, we're talking about a real injury, had an injury that just lingered on and on and on, and then he never ended up coming back. He was inactive for the playoff game against San Diego. One thing is, when you do get a little older, obviously the recovery time on some of this stuff is a little longer. Now, with sickness, it's a little different, but it is kind of interesting. It's kind of the same thing that we saw last year at the end of the year. It was surprising how long it took Terrence Newman to get back. We'll see how much of this carries over into Sunday's game and what that means for Dre Kirkpatrick. But I thought he actually played okay. But, you know, when you give up that long play, you can't have that. Even as hard as it was, you just can't get turned around like that. Especially on a ball that maybe you could argue that he probably could have or should have picked. What else with this defense? I mean, I was impressed by their run defense.
Pittsburgh did not. Now they got the 59-yard run by Josh Harris that
called back.
They ended up getting called back by a holding penalty, and they did gash him on that. But you can argue they gashed him because the guy held on the outside and it created a gash. I mean, really, there were very little running lanes. I mean, they did a good job of on that counter play of getting a lot of bodies into gaps. I thought they did just a great job of knowing what they had to do to stop it, and then going ahead and doing it, and really putting a stop to it.
Yeah, you're right about that. It's going to be with this Indianapolis game, it's just going to be really interesting because I can't say whether with this defense or with this offense that I would look at that 27-0 result and almost be able to pull anything from it, because that day they were playing essentially the whole game.
Yeah, there's one thing you pull from it. Kevin Huber got himself right. Yeah. I mean, honestly, he did. He really did. He points at that game as that's what kind of got his season going, was kicking as much in that game and kicking so well in that game. So you can take that from it.
Kevin Huber, that was the easiest game ball I've given out all year, was that day.
That was the start of his Pro Bowl trip.
It was.
Right there.
It really was. That was his shining moment. But, you know, that day, they were basically, after Burfict went out early, were playing with Vinnie Ray, Jason DeMonch, and Marquise Flowers as their three linebackers. Yeah, that's going to be trouble.
And Vinny really is not. And Vinny was playing the middle then. I mean, Vinny's done a nice job.
Vinny's played really well on the outside. I mean, since they got it set up with Maluga and Lemure and Vinny Ray moving to that outside spot, Vinny Ray has been very, very good. I mean, he's made a lot of plays, tackles for loss, penetrating, really good instincts, taking the right angles. I just think he's more comfortable. Yeah. He's more comfortable on that edge, than he is in the middle and being the guy having to kind of run the show, for sure.
Well, he just isn't big enough to play in the middle. He really, truly isn't. And he was really lost. Remember, he was lost in coverage that day. They threw a pass literally over the top of his helmet. I think it was to Dwayne Allen, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that was a great throw.
It was a great throw. Yeah, it was a perfect, perfect throw. But I mean, never got his head around on the football. He was just it was a rough day for everybody. Marquise Flowers, I'm not sure he ever ran to the right spot on defense on that day. So yeah, I'm not sure what you can say. They didn't run it. They didn't throw it. You know, what was it? Eight of the first nine series were three and outs, something like that. Something silly.
It was absolutely brutal. But that day, Jeremy Hill had four carries. They were still trying to figure out what Giovanni Bernard is.
They got him killed.
They got him killed that day. No A.J. Green. I mean, it was...
Greg Little dropped the ball, very first ball thrown to him.
He did. He really did. And, you know, they... The line was healthy at that point, I believe.
Yeah.
So that was the one thing they maybe still had. But, you know, they were in no way the current offensive structure.
Is that
your play? I don't know. They were in no way the current offensive structure they are now, with the run first, run heavy, Jeremy Hill, you know, at 5.1 a carry. They were nothing like that. And Indy was able to crowd because they weren't afraid of A.J. Green at all.
Speaking of Jeremy, how about him talking about how he was disappointed in what he didn't do and what the running game didn't do? He did 23 for 100. I will tell you, there were a couple plays, Paul, where I thought he was about to pop it, and he got ankle tackled a couple times. And that hasn't happened to him very much this year. I think he's right. I'll give him a little credit for a little – maybe reflection on that. When you look and you go, third straight 100-yard game day in the season, and my gosh, those the three starts he had at the end of the year, he combined for 395 yards. That's pretty doggone good numbers when you take the aggregate of that. But there were some runs on Sunday night that he that was on him to some degree, that he kind of left on the field.
Yeah, I mean, I think in particular the one run up the middle with the gaping hole, and it was pretty much him one-on-one and with nothing but Green, if he could break the tackle and end up getting taken down for like an 8-yard gain.
Yeah,
but
it
was so well blocked, yeah. You thought it could have gone to the house. And
because Hewitt got a second-level block on that play. And
yeah.
And it looked like, yeah, he was going to pop for a touchdown.
And that's the difference between 23 for 100 and 23 for 150, which is what his previous games have been, because he had kept – he found that one or two runs where he was able to bust the long one, and he was never able to really get the real long one going against Pittsburgh. They did a good job shoring up their tackles in the backside. But like I said earlier, I mean, I think if you looked at matchups, not I put a poll out earlier in the week asking, okay, of these three options that looked like the most likely, whether it would be San Diego at home, Baltimore at home, or having to go to Indianapolis, which one would you prefer? And most people said San Diego at home. Very close second was Baltimore and Indy. I would say the Bengals' best matchup at this point with the way that they are is a team that doesn't stop the run well. Because if they could just line up and run it down someone's throat for 200-plus yards, not have to worry about much else, because that's their weakness, that can be how they can do it. And that Indy has not stopped the run. They've actually given up over 100 yards each of their last four games on the ground. I mean, they can absolutely be gouged there, and it would seem the game plan would be pretty simple for the Bengals.
Yeah, and right, wrong, or indifferent, I love Andrew Luck. I think he's terrific. He hasn't done a ton more so far in the playoffs than Andy Dalton's done. He's done some good things. He's done some, again,
put on the tape of last year's comeback against Kansas City.
It was fabulous. I'm not telling you it wasn't fabulous. But if you want to, if what you're counting is continuing to win games in the playoffs, and again, I don't want this to sound like I'm dissing Andrew Luck. I think he's outstanding. I love watching him play. I love the way he competes. But I would rather face him and them, and this is going to sound stupid, and sometimes I come off sounding stupid, I don't care, than Joe Flacco, who's done it before.
Yeah.
And getting Haloti Ngata back after the four-game suspension to shore up that run defense. You're right. I think, as goofy as it sounds, despite the fact that you beat Baltimore twice and Indianapolis housed you 27-0 in every way, shape, or form, I think actually on paper it's a better matchup for you.
I felt that from the very – my one reaction when people started chiming in with their answers, I thought there would be much more run for Indy because they haven't looked great lately. I mean, they have not played all that well down the stretch, and they've got a lot of holes. They have Andrew Luck and not much else. They're the anti-Bengals. They have the quarterback and not much else, where the Bengals have everything else, but they don't have the quarterback. It's kind of an interesting – play to see how that will work itself out. Well, we're getting closer here. We're getting closer here to entering the greater Cincinnati area and the I-275 belt, which is very exciting.
We're approaching the greater Lebanon area, I believe.
Yeah, beautiful out here. Beautiful country.
Stop in the Golden Lamb for a little lunch. No, we don't have time.
We really don't. But so we can wrap this up here, but remember, again, on Thursday, we're going to have a second podcast for you this week, the live video podcast. We'll take your Twitter questions. So if you have any questions that we didn't get to or you want to have answered here during the week, fire them off to us. We'll put it out to you again later in the week to remind you. But fire them off to us. We'll answer them live and go through some of your questions and everything you want to know about this week's playoff week, because you're all sitting there just waiting for the shoe. Here it comes.
Shoe in hand. Shoe ready to drop.
Shoe ready to drop. It's the storyline that every other storyline has been connected to. It's the grand. It's like when you're trying to stop the drug ring. You know, you spend some time working on this guy down here and this guy down here, but it's all in a play to work yourself up the line to the main cellar. And this is it. The first week, the finally breaking the playoff curse is the kingpin. It's the Jimmy Hoffa. It's you name it. It's whoever it is. This is the story.
Pablo freaking Escobar, man.
That's who it is. It is exactly who it is. This
Tony
is the
Montana.
One. This is the all that really matters is Did they do enough in every other aspect over the course of this year to, when they arrive at this moment again, they're good enough to get over the hump? Or is it the same old story, the same old song and dance? We shall see if that's what it is next week. Maybe that'll end up being our song next week.
I think you may have to send us out with that on this one.
I feel like we need a road song for this one, though. You know?
Yeah, the old Roger Miller.
What's the old Roger Miller?
Actually, no, it's the old Johnny Cash song. I've been to Tulsa to speak doodle. You know the song I'm talking about. I can't think of the name of it.
I can't think of the name either.
I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere.
That's good for one of our last regular season road trip of the year.
I've been everywhere.
We've been all over the place.
And we're going back to Indy.
We're going back to Indy, right back to where we've already been.
Oh, you know what? We should play then.
What's that?
Well, Cool J going back to Cali, and just in your mind, substitute Indy. I'm going back to Indy.
It doesn't work.
To Indy. I'm going back to Indy. Man, I don't think so.
I like it. And now, or maybe you should just take us out by doing all of 50 Cent, in the club. Because it is your... Do we save that? We're saving it for Super Bowl week, remember?
That's Super Bowl week.
Yeah, when the Bengals... If the Bengals advance to the Super Bowl, as everyone, I'm sure, Cincinnati assumes they will... you will do every word to end the club here on the podcast.
Square. Town got flair.
Wow, freestyle. It was pretty good. That was pretty good. I think...
Going back to Indy. Man, I don't think so.
Well, for the three of you that decided to stick around through the end of this podcast, we apologize. Luckily, no more cheeseburger... eating 53 mile per hour.
No, but let me sit down with this, kids. If you don't mind, take this lesson and please take it to the bank. If you are going to on a 2-lane highway, the left lane is for passing only. Pass and get over. Don't sit there. Don't pick that lane to like mile marker 10 and still be in that lane at mile marker 9, because you picked that lane when you woke up in the morning going 57 freaking miles an hour in a 70 zone. Don't do it. Just don't, for the love of God, do it. That's all. I'm going to pass these people now, Paul.
I think your rage and attitude properly reflects that of the fan base listening right now as they await Sunday. I think it's a fitting way to go out.
I was going to say, if the Bengals lose Sunday and you're driving back from Indy, please, for all that's holy, drive in the right lane, unless you're passing, because there's going to be a lot of road rage that night.
There will be a whole lot of road rage. 5 stabbings on I-74. So we look forward to that. Of course, big thanks to JosephAuto.com, our sponsors of everything we do here, including the podcast. They've been great. Beyond the Stripes, Tuesday night again, 7 o'clock, the Moorline Lager House. We will be there. We're going to keep doing Beyond the Stripes until the week after the Bengals are officially eliminated or win the Super Bowl. Would end up being our last show. So you can keep coming down there for that, and I'm sure everyone's going to be very excited, especially if they can find a way to break the drought and find a way to get through this week for their first playoff win since 1990. My God, unbelievable. Let's do Johnny Cash, because we all love Johnny Cash.
Love Johnny Cash.
And for our beautiful road edition of Scribe Session, we will let Johnny Cash take us out, and we will talk to you on Thursday on our second Scribe Session podcast of the week. We will see you then.
Listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.